You're listening to the Better for America podcast, presented by AMAC, the Association of Mature American Citizens.
Hello, everybody. I'm Rebecca Weber, and this is your AMAC podcast, Better for America. Thank you all for tuning in today. We've got a great segment. I'll be interviewing Congressman Paul Gosar. Congressman Gosar, he represents Arizona's 4th District. He has been serving, he's in his 6th term in Congress as representative, as I said, from the 4th Congressional District. He was first elected in 2010, and Congressman Gosar came to Congress with no prior political experience, which is really great. I think that we learn that the less you're involved in politics when you get into that arena, you sort of see things through better lens, in my opinion. What's great about Congressman Gosar is he previously was a business owner, so he understands how business works, and I think that's really important for folks in Washington. They need to understand the real world and how things really work, and we're seeing that more and more today. Folks are making decisions in Washington that are not good and for the people. Congressman Gosar is very passionate about a number of priorities, including the southern border crisis. So I'm going to talk to him about the southern border crisis, what he is seeing firsthand. You're going to hear it live from Congressman Gosar. I'm going to talk to him about H.R. 1 and S.1. This is a behemoth bill. This is a bill that is labeled For the People's Act. That is a lie. It is a wolf in sheep's clothing. And what's interesting is over the weekend, I came across an article. I think the New Yorker put out an article essentially touting H.R. 1 and its companion bill, S.1, in the Senate as this marvelous bill that the mean, big, mean Republicans don't want to see get passed through for their own political interests. Folks, that's not the truth. That's the way the mainstream media is spinning H.R. 1. We're going to talk about this legislation and why it's dangerous to America, for America. We've got over 72,000 AMAC members in Arizona alone. And you folks in Arizona, if you're listening, you sent out over 5,500 emails to the Arizona State Legislature explaining why you oppose H.R. 1 and S.1. I want to remind people that are listening, there's a lot that you can do to get involved in your local community. There's a lot that you can do. And AMAC provides you with all of the tools necessary. There's not a lot of, it's not very difficult because we know what we need individuals, patriotic Americans across the United States of America doing. So we give you a toolbox, essentially. We give you step-by-step guideline on what you can do and how you can do it. Here's what you may be interested if you are interested in getting involved and you want to see change in your state, in your community, and across the nation as a whole. I'm going to urge you to go to amacaction.org. That's www.amacaction.org. What you're going to do at the very top of that website, amacaction.org, you're going to see a button that says Get Involved. I urge you to click on that button. It'll bring you to a small short form. You're going to fill out some basic information, and then we're going to give you a call. You're going to hear from us within 48 hours. We're going to reach out to you. We're going to talk to you about how we can help you help all of us. Together, there's so much that we can do. There's strength in numbers, and we just need to be reminded that this government has gotten huge, out of control, so big, and is so far-reaching, and we're feeling it. Especially conservatives are feeling it more than ever. There's a lot that you can do, and I'm so proud of our members across the country that have been holding town hall meetings. Today is, what is today? Tuesday, March 30th. Your elected representatives should all be back home now. This is a really good time for us to help you set up a town hall meeting. See, what happens is when the elected representatives or senators and congressmen, when they go home, I think that they should feel the heat from people that are not aligned with some of the things that they stand for. And this is a really wonderful time for you to sort of get in their face, and we can help you do that. That is the way our government works, and it's really not very difficult. So we want to help you, help us, help all Americans, so that we can, win back our country, because we do feel like it's slipping away, right? The very basic foundations, the virtues and foundations that have made this nation so great, little by little, they're being chipped away, little by little. Each and every day, we see that there is less power to the people and more power to government. And we know that that's bad. We know that that's bad in the long run. Some other things I'll talk to Congressman about is, he's big for vets. He loves our vets. And he's got a great piece of legislation, H.R. 855, that is aimed at really protecting and standing up for our veterans, essentially our disabled vets, who many of whom can't stand, right? God bless them all for fighting for our country. And many of our veterans are disabled. And so we'll learn about HR 855 and how that helps our veterans. So excited to speak with him about that. Finally, I will ask the congressman a little bit about this $1.9 billion COVID relief bill, which we understand only a small percentage of that money is actually going to COVID relief. And so we've got a long list of other ways in which the government wants to spend that $1.9 trillion. I said billion, it's $1.9 trillion. Let me make that correction, $1.9 trillion. A lot of this money is going to places that I don't think we all voted for. For example, $50 million to environmental justice grants. I see this as really kickbacks, thinly veiled way in which money is allocated for environmental justice. I wonder who all of those groups really are. We see $112 million will be spent on the California Transit Project, $10 million for Native American language preservation, $200 million for museums and library services, many of which haven't been open, expansion of Obamacare subsidies. Folks, billions of dollars to public schools, whether they reopen or not. I mean, isn't that really just a handout for teacher unions and public schools and teachers if they're going to get the money regardless whether they reopen or not? And then, of course, there's countless pet projects, money that is going in the hands of powerful lawmakers, folks like Chuck Schumer. This bill, $1.5 million will allocate for the Seaway International Bridge, which will connect New York to Canada. But this is a priority for Senator Chuck Schumer. So who the heck is going to pay for all of this? You know who's going to pay for it? Older people. Why are older people going to be stuck with the bill at the end of the day? Because older people, and I'm really referencing people 40 and above, people who have been working hard for many years, people who are saving for retirement, people who are looking to plan those, golden years, and working very hard now. Well, those are the folks that are going to be really burdened with increased taxes. We're going to see the value of the dollar decrease. We're going to see inflation rates like we've never seen before. And that's coming because at the end of the day, someone needs to pay for all of this, right? Money doesn't just grow on trees. So you know that. Congressman Gosar gets that. I'm excited to have him back with me here in just a few moments. So don't go away. Stay tuned. Coming right up, Congressman Gosar. With me today is Congressman Paul Gosar. Congressman Gosar is serving his sixth term in Congress as the representative from Arizona's 4th Congressional District. And as I've mentioned, he was first elected in 2010, and he really came with, I think, a great perspective because prior to being elected to Congress, he owned his own dental practice and was a small businessman in Flagstaff for 25 years. What I love about Congressman Gosar is that he believes that the Constitution is the cornerstone of our republic. So he pursues policies that allow for more individual liberty and less government involvement, which is great. Congressman Gosar is also focused on bringing jobs back to his district, fighting illegal immigration, and securing the border.
And what we love, Congressman, is you are challenging the status quo and you are holding Washington bureaucrats accountable. So I'm excited to talk to you about a handful of issues. You have focused so much of your legislative work on really protecting the United States and your constituents in the great state of Arizona. You were one of the 139 representatives that voted to overturn the 2020 presidential election, and you have been a strong ally of Trump. Our members thought Donald Trump did a phenomenal job protecting our borders. One of your priorities is the situation at the border. And so that's a conversation that we're excited to have with you. You see it as a crisis, which is, it sure is. It's a crisis. It needs to be immediately addressed. And I want to share with our listeners the statement that you issued after actually sending a letter to Biden. You invited President Biden to Yuma County to see firsthand the crisis along the southern border. And so the following statement that you issued, I just want to share it with listeners. You said the Biden administration doesn't seem to understand or simply won't admit that there is a crisis along the southern border. The White House press secretary acknowledged the crisis by referring to it only as a challenge. At a House Homeland Security Committee hearing this week, the Department of Homeland Security secretary would only refer to what is happening as complex. So, Congressman, I want to ask you, tell us what you're seeing at the southern border. Explain to us what the crisis really looks like and share with us, why do you think that the administration is ignoring what's really happening?
Well, I visited the border down in Yuma last week, so this is fresh information. You know, we're seeing where there was 20 some people coming across the border last year to now over 400 that are being actually apprehended. And we're seeing children. You know, when we were there, we saw children coming across by coyotes. And particularly the last group that we saw in the evening was a coyote that had seven children, none of them related, girls from the ages of 11 to 17. And Border Patrol have actually found day after pills on the border as well. So what we've done is we've turned over the operational control of our border to the cartels. In the month of February, they made over $400 million trafficking people across the border. Now, I mean, these are trafficking young women, children across the border. This is uncalled for, making this trek all the way across Mexico to come into this country and then be reshuffled back over again. That's troubling. And so when the administration won't even come to see, and they have a vice president who was put in charge that laughed about going to the border, and she's actually called ICE and related them to the Ku Klux Klan. This is unbelievable. They hated the President Trump so badly that they wanted to get rid of everything that he stood for. And just think about this, Rebecca. If they would have just done nothing, just allowed the Trump administration's policies to keep going, we'd be much better off.
Oh, that is so true. And you know, it sounds like to me, every time I turn on the news, mainstream news, or read a newspaper today, there's not enough focus and attention. The truth, we've got to get the truth out. It seems that the left, and it is an extreme left today, will do anything and everything possible in order to maintain power. They're ignoring the will of the people and sugarcoating this crisis, making it seem as if it was actually Donald Trump's fault. They claim that the border is not open. We know that that is a lie because we see exactly what you're saying. They're using language that isn't truthful. And there, a lot of people in America are not in areas where they're, you know, directly impacted. They're not close to the border, let's say, in northern states. And so maybe it's not an issue that's really hitting very close to their home. But we have to see the long-term, results of this poor, poor policy. Who is going to house these children? Are they going to be forced into schools? Are they coming over with COVID? And, you know, of course we are. I mean, I love America because we are a nation of immigrants. And I think that we always want to invite people to come into our country. But there needs to be a legal process around this. They're sticking the American taxpayer, and it's going to hurt older people down the road because the money needed to take care of people and then to assimilate them into society, to get them into schools, to pay for their housing, it's going to fall on the shoulders of older people, people who are really 40 and older that have been saving money, that are trying to, you know, working 2-3 jobs, just to get ahead in life. And those are the folks that are going to be crushed because at the end of the day, problems need to be paid. You know, somebody's got to pay for thousands, the tens of thousands of children that are coming into this nation. It's just a very, very poor policy. So you invited Mr. Biden to witness firsthand what you're seeing. And what was their response?
Crickets. We heard nothing but crickets, you know, and that just shows you the disdain that they have for the border, for the crisis, the problem, the outright denial of trafficking, of the surge of drugs now coming into our country. So it makes you wonder, you know, President Trump wanted America first. I guess President Biden wants America last. I guess that's what the process is. And we're willing to support lawlessness and the cartels and the trafficking of human beings. Unbelievable what we're seeing here. You know, in one of the facilities we saw, it would house 100 children at normally a capacity. There were over 360 children there stacked up, nowhere to go but in these rooms. And then they had these temporary tents with little blankets that are made out of aluminum. That's not how we do things in America. There's a right way and there's a wrong way.
That's right.
And even, you know, it's so sad because now we're even getting comments from the president of Mexico saying, listen, something's wrong here. You know, so, I mean, this isn't just, you know, the Republicans. This isn't just conservatives. These are not just people that support Trump. These are Americans through and through and our neighbors.
That's true. And I'm very, very proud to hear that you sent this letter to President Biden urging him to visit Yuma County in your district, which runs along the southern border. It's being pummeled by never-ending waves of illegal migrant crossings. And you yourself said it. You said if the president were to personally observe what the heck is going on down here, he would immediately, if he had a heart, he would immediately say, we ought to leave the current policies, the Trump policies in place, because we're inviting a big, big problem to the footsteps of our country and putting the burden on American people who are really just trying to survive, especially after coming out of a year, you know, a pandemic that has closed so many businesses. People are struggling. Average everyday Americans are struggling. So there's got to be a better way. I want to ask you, before I move on to my next question, what would you encourage people to do? I mean, I love finding solutions, you know, and I do like to talk about what's out there. And we need to talk because we need to speak about the truth. Not many people are brave enough or have the courage that you have, Congressman, to go against this establishment that wants you to be quiet, you know? So I applaud you for your efforts. What can average everyday American people do? I know that we've got a lot of work in 2022. We've got to elect the right people in office. But what might you say to folks that are listening that are outraged over what's happening?
What we got to start doing, Rebecca, is we need to support our states. You know, people like Ron DeSantis, you know, in Texas, that are standing up against the federal government and saying, listen, these are the things that you are mandated to do. We cannot accept this. So we want to make sure that people chime into their attorney generals. It's time to sue this administration. It's time to hold the line on the sovereignty of our states. And that means we need to have our governors, our attorney generals, our state legislatures start to pony up and show a stiff spine, because most of the stuff that we're talking about, other than the immigration and border support, is state-run. And we need to reclaim that and make sure that the federal government is abiding by us, the protection of all of us. So I think that's the biggest key. And then looking at solutions that actually worked, the stay in Mexico policy, that worked extremely well. That way we could assimilate and discern if there was an actual reason that they had a valid reason for asylum. It worked. And Mexico went along with it. They loved it. And so it was an application and a solution to a problem. It slowed it down. And there's plenty of other things, but, you know, join us. You know, we should empower people to come to this country, but the right way.
Well, I'm glad that you mentioned that there is something that people can do, because we, as you know, over 2.3 million AMAC members, of which we have over 72,000 AMAC members that are reside in the state of Arizona. They are enraged. 5,500 emails were sent to the state legislature on a whole range of issues, most recently on HR1 and S1. Our members are fully engaged. So when we tell our members that there's something that they can do, and we give them step by step how to do it, how to contact your representatives, how to hold a town hall meeting, I've been telling people, this is the time. If our elected senators and congressmen are home, now might be a really good time to hold a town hall meeting and say, hey, wait a minute, you know, and I'm talking across the country. People can get involved. So we're urging them to see our website. Congressman, it is a problem. It is a huge issue. We know that it's a problem. Trump called it a national emergency. We've got large scale unlawful migration coming through the border. It's going to get worse under President Biden's administration. So it's so good that we're talking about this. I want to move over to HR1 and S1. Mm-hmm. Our members are aware of what this bill. There are so many egregious components to this bill. So we've been speaking loudly because it's terrible. We're calling it the wolf in sheep's clothing. We're urging members and any listener, really, contact your senator to stop. It's called For the People's Act. Can you imagine the name that they give this bill? So we're urging people to visit our website at amac.us for step-by-step, you know, instruction on how you can reach your elected representatives. The House of Representatives passed the bill, HR1. It's a federal takeover of the election process, is really what it is. It would weaken the security of future elections, not strengthen them. As we know, our elections need to be strengthened. We did a poor job in 2020. We were up against a pandemic. We saw what mail-in ballots did. We saw what vote harvesting can do. We recognized that the voter rolls needed to be cleaned up. This bill doesn't seem to attack or address any of the real problems. It actually does the opposite. It undermines the state's election oversight. It prohibits requiring a state voter ID. And our members are in full favor of voter ID. I mean, what the heck? You need to show that you've been vaccinated before you can cross a border, but you don't need to show ID to vote. Mm-hmm. This country is really upside down and backwards altogether. So can you share with us where we're at? HR1, S1 is the companion bill. That'll go to the Senate. And where are we at? Can you give us a flavor of what's happening?
Yeah, so the bill passed. All Democrats voted for it, and they have a majority, so that's how you got it out of the House. And it sits in the Senate now. And so one of the key components is the filibuster. And so one of the things we want to make sure to do is we want to alert your members that the filibuster needs to stay intact. And there are two people, believe it or not, that have been holding it up. And it is Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema from Arizona. We need people to chime in to say, listen, you know, hold the line on the filibuster. We need to make sure that that stays in place because, you know, the House was built to be a kind of a hot, steamy, impulsive chamber. But the Senate was meant to be a kind of a cooling off and debating issue. You know, the Democrats talk about the filibuster and its abuse. Well, they were the ones that abused it, you know, during the Trump administration. How many times did they invoke that and stop critical legislation? So we need to get back to good process, build good policy, good politics. So that's number one, is making sure the filibuster gets in place. We need to make sure that people understand what's in this bill. Yes, it federalizes the election process. It allows you, the taxpayer, to fund campaigns, not just campaigns for office, but for the living aspects of those that are running. So daycare, health insurance, unbelievable. It takes oversight from six FEC, Federal Elections Commissioners, six to five. So it reduces it all the way across the board. It makes it mandatory that same-day registration and voting, mandatory mail-in ballots. So no cross-referencing whatsoever here. This is dangerous.
And it really is.
We saw the last election. You know, we're actually going through a forensic audit in Arizona because of the complexity and the fraud that was involved here. You know, so that's counting one ballot at a time. And we've had mail-in ballots for some 20 years. We still have problems with that. And so this is something that we need to make sure that we are very thorough about and make it not an impulsive move. But Pelosi, Schumer, and Biden, that's all they want. They want that impulsive aspect of trashing our election process. I guess they hate this country more than they love it.
That's right. They hate Trump more than they love their own constituents because they're not listening to the people. This is, I want to explain to folks who may be confused about the filibuster and what it is, because we're hearing a lot about the filibuster. So this requires 60 of the 100 senators to essentially say, okay, we're going to go ahead and we're going to move this bill to the floor. And now we're going to take a serious look at this and debate and or vote, essentially. Do I have that right? Because I've never.
Mm-hmm.
OK, so that's how I understand it. And what you're really saying is that if these two Democrats were to suddenly say, tell us how what can happen, Manchin and Sinema, what can they do to essentially change that filibuster rule?
So if they decide that they want to vote for it, then what ends up happening, they would take the vote to the Senate floor by a simple majority, and that's 50-50 right now in the Senate. But Kamala Harris, the vice president, is the tiebreaker. So what they would do is they would move to break the policy, and it would be 50-50. And then what would happen is that Kamala would cast the deciding vote, and then there would be no way to stop HR1, as well as the gun, the gun bills, anything they wanted to really pass.
Anything that they want to do. And I think people recognize how dangerous this is and how important it is that we remember that these filibuster rules have been in place for many years, over 100 years. Am I right about that?
Yeah,
and so now suddenly...
Right.
Suddenly now the Dems, they say, okay, well, we've got control of the House and, there are such slim margins in the Senate. They're saying, let's ignore the policies that have been in place, the ways in which we've done things for years and decades so that we can rush through and cram through this bill. Folks that are listening have to understand if this S1 is passed and this becomes the law of the land, folks, I don't know if we'll ever be able to elect a Republican president. They really want to move this country to like a single party. And that's really what HR 1. It also is an attack on your First Amendment right. So there's a big part of this bill that really is, takes all of the integrity out of our elections. Handcuffs our states, in a sense, or micromanages their process. And it goes a whole step further. I just want to pull up some information here. I made myself some notes on the freedom of speech. Boy, there are some things that I just want to quickly emphasize. It is an assault on First Amendment rights to freedom of political speech. It will go after donors to conservative organizations. It'll subject citizens who contribute to nonprofit organizations to political harassment and intimidation because the information will be made public. Personal information will be available in a searchable government database. And then it also could impose certain regulations on websites. Ads, which typically, for goodness sakes, it's just more government and
bigger government, more government overreach. It permits, back to what it does on the voting side, it permits voter harvesting by making it criminal to interfere with those who are assisting others to vote. So like you said, it enables partisan control of the Federal Elections Commission. It reduces the commission from 6 to 5. This will facilitate one-party oversight of federal elections and campaign finance laws. Folks need to understand that if you haven't yet contacted your elected representatives, we urge you to do so. There's no greater time to act than right now. HR 1, S 1, I can't speak loudly enough about this, and I've been talking about it for weeks, for months now. Let's move on and talk about, let's switch gears a little. I want to talk about HR 855. So many of AMAC members are veterans. And, you know, I grew up, my grandfather was a World War II vet. He served in the Korean War. He was a wonderful grandpa. I mean, he always told me these stories and would pray that I would never live to see another world war. So we love our veterans, and so many of our AMAC members are vets. So can you tell us a little bit about HR 855? AMAC is in full support of this wonderful piece of legislation, which I understand you're in the very early stages of introducing this. Is that right?
Absolutely. It's our Vet Safe Act. And think about it. So many of our veterans, as you said, articulately wise, are handicapped. There's amputees, blind. You know, when you just look at the staggering numbers, 70,000 have had amputees, 130,000 are declared blind. And so shuffling to go through an airport, we should actually make it easier for them, not harder, to go through that process. So what this basically does is it streamlines the process so they can get into TSA pre-check, so that it makes it easier for them to get and travel across this great country that they protected so emphatically. So that's what it basically does is it streamlines the process for them, allows them to get into TSA pre-check. They got to do some a little bit of background and stuff like that with TSA. But that's it in a nutshell. It helps them travel across this great country and rewards their service to all of us.
That is wonderful. I have a TSA pre-check, and it really makes my life so much easier when I travel. I'd give up my TSA pre-check to any vet any day of the week. So I think that this is just a wonderful proposal. And I thank you and your many bipartisan co-sponsors, because it is a very thoughtful and considerate piece of legislation. It'll make air travel easier for veterans with service-related disabilities. And so we appreciate it. Our members appreciate, you know, that you want to improve their travel experience. And we fully support HR 855, the Vets Safe Travel Act. That is really fantastic. You have done, I guess you're aware of some of the crazy ways in which our government is spending the $1.9 trillion coronavirus stimulus package. I did some poking around, some research. My team here has done some research. And what we have found, Congressman, is that so much of this money is going to places that I don't think if Americans ourselves, if we could look through this stimulus package and see where this money is going, I don't think many people would really believe that such a small percentage is actually going to 9% to combat the virus. So where the heck is the rest of the money going? And man, here's what's going to happen again. Who's going to pay for it? I mean, I think that in the long run, we see what's happening. The government just wants to spend. They want people to be so dependent on the government to solve their problems. The government wants to try to convince you that it's, you know, bad rich people, it's business owners, mean business owners, it's, you know, white men. I mean, the narrative that we hear every day is like, blame everyone else for the problems that you have and run to the government to solve your problems and to get you out of trouble. Terrible message for our youth, because we want folks to grow up and have a sense of accountability, purpose. We want people to feel, you know, you just think about what you want for your own children, your grandchildren, your siblings, your nieces, your nephews. You want people to be successful. But there's been this twisted mentality that penalizes people that want to work hard and supports people that want government handouts. So back to the mm-hmm. $1.9 trillion, it seems that a lot of money is going in to the wrong place. A couple of things I'll quickly mention that I found is we've got environmental justice grants to the tune of $50 million. Could those be really thinly veiled kickbacks? Will they go to left-wing political groups, the environmental justice grants? We've got the California Transit Project covered here, Native American language preservation to the tune of $10 million, another $200 million to museums and libraries. But the billions of dollars to public schools, whether or not they open, that to me seems like a handout for teachers unions, public schools, whether they will get the money, whether they reopen or not. So what is your thought on the $1.9 trillion? Anything that people, that the American people should know about?
Well, I mean, you said it very, very well. 9% spent on COVID-related issues and reimbursements. Just 9%. Now, we went through a pandemic, and yes, and we're starting to come out. But the government used its reach to impugn businesses and individuals across the board. That's what they call a tankings, where the federal government owes it to us, okay, so to get us back on our feet. But not to Pakistan, not to the transit aspects, not to every Democratic wish list here. We actually put an amendment forward that took nine of the line items, just nine of them, took those out, and we were able to say, okay, for these nine line items, let's take that money and let's divide it up and give it to every American citizen. That was $10,000, Rebecca.
Wow.
Not the paltry $1,400 that we had to pay $5,000 in taxes per person to get $1,400. That's $10,000 per person. Just with nine line items.
Unbelievable.
I'm unbelievable. And most of this money isn't even going to be spent this year. It's in next year, in an election year. So it's unbelievable. Plus, we had over $1 trillion sitting out in the American space that haven't been spent yet from previous bills. So what's up? Now we're going to be talking about a $3 trillion infrastructure bill. We're $30 trillion in debt.
Well, that's the thing, and you know, at some point,
you start looking at it now. Medicare's insolvency has been pushed up to 2024. We're seeing the same thing with Social Security, and we see these programs out there like this OPT program. I talked to you about this before. And we incentivize like big companies, like big tech, to hire people from overseas. They pay them less. And then they get a 15.5% discount. So they have to pay less on their FICA, which is their federal withholding taxes that pay for Medicare and Social Security. So less is going in, yet these people will be able to take it back out. It's called double dipping. And there's so many of these people out there, we have no idea how much the numbers are. This is an out of control federal bureaucracy. And the Democrats want that freight train to just go faster.
They do. Well, you know, we see it. AMAC members are aware that government is out of control, that the current administration is trying to fool us with falsehoods. We know the truth. Mm-hmm. We know that the more we spend and let our national debt just balloon and expand, like you said, like a runaway freight train, at the end of the day, there will come a time. And it may not be today, but there will come a time when we're going to be faced with what do we do next? I mean, the value of the dollar, we know that we're going to see that weaken. We know that inflation, it's coming. And who is it going to hurt? It's going to hurt hardworking Americans, especially older Americans who have saved and worked so hard for so many years. Those are the folks that will be hit the hardest with tax increases. So AMAC is going to keep our eye on this. We're going to keep our listeners informed.
We are fighting to protect your Medicare. We're fighting to ensure that future generations do see a Social Security check. We've got great proposals in place. But for the immediate here and now, HR1 S1 is something that every single person listening can do something about. Visit our website, amac.us. Let us show you what you can do, because it'll be good for America if all Americans stand up and speak the truth. Congressman, thank you so much for joining us here. You know, it's no wonder that you were recognized in 2012 as one of the hardest working and most effective new members of Congress. You've done such good since you've been in Congress, and we need more folks like you on the right side of history. Thank you for the work that you do every day. And let's hope and pray. You know, there's a lot of power in prayer. And I do think that on top of being an AMAC member and writing your elected folks, sending in, you know, speaking your voice, we all need to remember to pray too, because I know that God is in control, and we just ask that God, you know, sort of soften the hearts and the minds of people who are just blind to the damage that they're causing America. So on that note, I want to thank you.
Thank you, Rebecca. You're so right. You know, it's with a smile that you take God in, and that allows us to have so many solutions. The other side's so angry, and that's because they've expelled God. You know, we were built on Judeo-Christian values, and, you know, in God we trust, and it's in God we will get back in this country.
Amen. That is great. Thank you again for joining us. And for everyone listening today, thank you for joining AMAC's podcast, Better for America. And I look forward to having you back with us again next time.
Thank you for listening to the Better for America podcast. To learn more about AMAC and all it has to offer, visit us at www.amac.us.